Blockchain technology opened doors for a new financial ecosystem. Having standards around to overcome security and regulatory challenges is a blessing to have. Whether you are a blockchain enthusiast, a financial expert, or simply curious about the future of digital securities, this episode will offer valuable insight into one of the most exciting developments in the token exchanges. Welcome back to PPenny, an exclusive series focused solely on Ethereum standards. I'm your host, Pooja Ranjan, and this is episode 126. Today, we will be learning about ERC-3643 TREX, token for regulatory exchanges. Documented in July 2019, this standard track ERC proposal has been moved to final status recently. To provide the insight and the journey of this ERC, we are joined by two of the co-authors, Joachim Lebrun and Tony Malgem. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for inviting us.
Before we get into the proposal, may I request guests to share a bit about themselves, the professional background, and how you find Ethereum.
So I'm Joachim Lebrun, so I'm the head of blockchain at Tokeny. I've been working in the tokenization industry for Tokeny for 5 years already. I'm the main author of the ERC-3643. It started first with an implementation that was done on our side at Tokeny because the existing standard were not fit correctly for the tokenization of real-world assets. So we started implementing that and we developed it more and more. And then we realized at some point that it was necessary to create standard for that would be shared with the whole community, because we don't want that the tokenized securities reproduce what exists in the traditional finance, which is silos everywhere and the interoperability is not there. So we need to have a common standard that can be used by anyone. And that's why we created ERC-3643.
I'm Tony Malgem. I'm the CTO at Tokeny. So I started working there a bit over 4 years ago. And I participated in the ERC a bit after Joachim started it. And building all the ecosystem of softwares around the ERC-3643, so how to use it. As an end user.
Very well. Thank you so much. This is pretty interesting, and I know we will learn more about the proposal and its journey. So without further ado, let's peep in.
Like you said, the ERC-3643, we could name it the T-Rex protocol when we started working on it. So it's the standard that we created for permission tokens and in the idea to bring a reliable and secure way to manage real-world assets on the blockchain. So we're going to start talking about architecture. So how we thought about the ERC-3643 is kind of a puzzle with different pieces that put together, we create a powerful yet very flexible token protocol that would allow to represent any financial asset on the blockchain. In this presentation, we will go through first, the global overview. So what are the smart contracts composing the standard and how they interact together. And we're going to dig deeper into the different pieces, starting with the token smart contract itself, the identity management, the claim management, and the compliance at the end of the presentation. So as a global overview, so the security token, it's basically an extension of the ERC-20. On which we have added some functions and an identity registry capabilities. So basically we are using it to allow wallets and identities on the blockchain to receive an ERC-3643. To do it, we have a set of 4 smart contracts, the identity registry, the identity registry storage, and claim topics registry and trusted claim issuer management. Together, they will check if you are, as an investor, if you are allowed to receive an ERC-3643. On top of that, we have added modular compliance module, which allows you to create any kind of compliance rule that you want in any jurisdiction all across the world, depending on the financial asset that you want to represent. Let's talk about the security token itself. So like I said, it's an extension of the ERC-20, which is linked to all the other smart contracts that are composing the TRAC suit, so the ERC-3643 standard. It contains the link first to the identity management and to the compliance contracts, which are created at the same time as the deployment of the contract or the token contract. And so we need to deploy the registry, the compliance, and then bound it to the token. We override the basic ERC-20 transfer functions and add additional rules. Basically, every time we are trying to issue or to emit a transfer, we are going to check the receivability. Are you allowed on your identity to receive the ERC-3643? And secondly, are you respecting the compliance rules that are supposed to be enforced by this token? So it can only happen if you are eligible and if you are respecting the compliance rules. That's what this diagram shows. With an ERC-20 token, it's basically I can transfer any tokens I want to you, Joachim, for example. But in the case of the ERC-3643, we are going to do a list of checks. First, checking my identity. The identity of the peer I'm trying to send the tokens to. Are them allowed to receive the tokens? And does the transfer respect the compliance rules? If it's the case, we can do the transfer of ownership of the token. If it's not the case, it's going to break at the smart contract level and prevent the transfer of unauthorized tokens.
Okay, so I will speak about the identity registry part and about the whole validator system that we just see in the slide before. So the first part is the identity registry. It's a very important part. So this identity registry is containing the functions to check the eligibility of investors. So each single investor in the ERC-3643 ecosystem will have to get an on-chain identity. So this on-chain identity is following the ERC-734, 735. So the claim receiving part and the management part. We will discuss that a little bit later. But basically, this identity registry is a smart contract that is token specific and that will implement a function called isVerified. And this function will be used to check on a wallet if the wallet is eligible. So the wallet is linked in the identity registry storage to an on-chain identity. An on-chain identity can be linked to as many wallets as you want. So you can imagine the wallet as being accounts, but an on-chain identity cannot be linked to the same wallet as another on-chain identity. So the wallets have to be belonging to one single on-chain identity. And so this identity registry, when the isVerified function is called, it will fetch the on-chain identity linked to the wallet. It will check on the on-chain identity of linked to this wallet if the on-chain identity is containing the right claims that are required to be eligible on the token. And if it's the case, then the transfer can happen. So that's a process that is described here. So first step is to check if there is an on-chain identity that is corresponding to this wallet in the identity registry storage, then fetch the claims corresponding to this on-chain identity, compare the claims to the required claims for the token. And if this claim is there and it's the one that is required, it will verify the cryptographic signature that is contained in the claim to validate this claim, to be sure that this claim is valid. So that's the role of the identity registry. The identity registry storage is containing, it can be considered as a database for the identity registry. So it will contain the link between the wallet addresses and the on-chain identities. And it can be shared, this one can be shared among multiple tokens. So if you have a token issuer that is deploying a lot of different tokens but want to share the same user database, it can just use the same identity registry storage for all these tokens. And this identity registry storage will be used by the identity registries that are token specific. So the point is that the identity registry is specifying rules for eligibility. The identity registry storage is just a storage. So it's just containing the data. So that's the idea here that I write, that you can share with different identity registry the same storage, and you don't need to store multiple times to have access to this data. So the next one is the claim topics registry. So this one is token specific, or I would like to say it's identity registry specific. So it's a one-to-one relationship between the token and the identity registry, and a one-to-one relationship between the trusted claim topics registry and the identity registry. So the claim topics registry will list the required claim topics that are necessary to be considered an eligible investor on the specific token that is linked to the identity registry. So if an investor wants to receive tokens following the ERC-3643 standard, it needs to be linked, his wallet needs to be linked to an on-chain ID that contains the claim with the top, that are listed in the claim topics registry. So you can have just one claim topic. In this case, it's mostly like KYC claim or something like that, but it can be more advanced. You can require more claims and have a lot of different claims that are required to be eligible. That really depends on the issuer necessities, mostly on the legal paperwork that is coming with the token. So that's very flexible. So the next one is the trusted issuer registry. So to issue these claim topics that are required to be eligible, the token issuer has also to appoint some trusted issuers. So only the claim topics that are emitted by these trusted issuers are considered valid. So you need to have, as I was saying before, the claim with the correct topic on your on-chain identity, but it needs also to be emitted by a trusted issuer that is trusted by the token issuer to issue these claims, and the token issuer can decide which trusted issuer is trusted for which claim topic. So this is very specific, and it can be done in a very flexible way also. So you can even have, for the same claim topic, multiple trusted issuers that are allowed by the token issuer. So that's a bit on the responsibility of the token issuer to decide that. So basically, the addresses that are linked in the trusted issuer registry that are there and that are appointed for the claim topics, when you verify the claim topic that is following the ERC 735 here, is that you will need to call the isClaimValid function on the claim issuer smart contract, and this will make the verification of the signature of the claim, which is a cryptographic signature, mostly in ECDSA, but can be compatible with other signature mechanisms. So that's the whole idea. So to give you a better overview about the identity check workflow, so when an investor wants to transfer tokens to another investor, it will trigger the function of transfer on the token smart contract, the same way as you would do on ERC20. But instead of just processing the transfer if you have enough tokens on your wallet, as you would do on a classic ERC20, what the token smart contract will do is that it will call the isVerified function on the identity registry, and the identity registry will first fetch the on-chain ID address of the receiver of the tokens on the identity registry storage. When it has the on-chain ID address of the receiver, it will fetch the claims that are required on the claim topics registry and the trusted issuers on the trusted issuer registry. After, it will fetch the claims of B, so of the receiver, and it will compare the claim that are held on the on-chain ID of the receiver with the requirements coming from the claim topics registry and the trusted issuer registry. If these claims that are required are there and are valid, you will have the fact that the receiver is eligible. It will return true. Basically, the is verified function will return true to the token smart contract, and then the token transfer can happen. If it's not the case, then the transfer will not happen and you will have a revert. So the next one is the compliance smart contract. So it's another way of verifying that the transfer is compliant. So the first part we just spoke about is about eligibility. So are you an eligible token holder? But here the compliance is much more complex because it's not just about the eligibility of the receiver or of the owner of the token. It's about the compliance of a specific token transfer. So the compliance smart contract is introducing a function can transfer, and this function can transfer takes into parameter the address from, the address to, and the amount of tokens. And this compliance smart contract is token specific, and it will validate that all the compliance checks that are required are fulfilled to make a transfer happen. So in our case at Tokeny, we decided to adopt a modular compliance approach. It's not mandatory, as you can see on the ERC standard. It's not something that is mandatory, but we believe that it's a very good approach because it's very flexible. So in this case, in the modular compliance approach, every single rule of compliance, every separate rule of compliance is a separate module. So a module is a smart contract, a separate smart contract, and your modular compliance can be bound to different modules. And depending on which modules it is bound to and what are the settings on these modules for that modular compliance, you have a different compliance framework. So the idea is that, and this modular compliance contract in the can transfer function will process the check on every single bound module to see if the transaction is approved or not. To make it more concrete, I would say that I give you some example of modules. So one example of module is a max supply module. So it's something that is quite common in the ERC-20, but as we want it here to have token smart contract that is not modified between different issuance, so you have always the same token smart contract, not changing this one, the max supply cannot just be hard-coded in the token smart contract. So the idea is to add it as a module. So every time you have a minting that happens, the compliance smart contract will check that the minting is not making the supply get over a certain maximum supply that has been fixed. Another one is a max balance. So this one is going to check that at every transfer, you are not going to get more than X percent of the total supply, for example, or X tokens linked to the wallets of a specific identity owner. So here it's not based on wallets, it's based on identities. And that's the approach that we have in most compliance modules, is that the compliance is set at the identity level and not that at the wallet level. So it's the case here for the max balance. You could have a maximum amount of token per investor. It's the case also in the next one. So daily, monthly limit, transfer limits. So let's say that the issuer has to apply a compliance rule that is setting a maximum volume of transfer of token per day or per month for an investor. It will be applied also this one at the identity level. So even if you transfer with multiple wallets that are linked to your on-chain ID, it will apply the rule to your identity. So in this case, the module will store some counters, let's say, about the transfer that already happened during the day, the last day or the last month for this identity owner. And the transfer will be blocked if you try to overgo the limits. So another one, which is very important for some type of assets, is the conditional transfer. So in this case, the transfers will by default be blocked, like all transfer will be blocked, unless the transfer has been pre-approved by the token issuer or the agents of the token issuers. So that's a very restrictive module of compliance, but it gives you an idea also of how far you can go in terms of compliance, of applying compliance on chain. So in this case, yes, every transfer is blocked until it has been pre-approved. Another one is the last one that I give here as an example, but you have so many more. Someone looking at this one to check on the T-Rex implementation done by Tokeny, we have a lot of open source modules like this. So it's very flexible and you can go as far as you want. It's really depending on what you want to apply as a rule of compliance. But the last one here that I will give as an example is the max number of token holders. So again, it will be linked to the identities and not to the wallets. So you can have as many wallets holding tokens as you want. But if for a specific reason, the token issuer has to apply a compliance rule like this, in which you have a maximum number of token holders at every single transfer, if you are transferring to a new holder, it will check at the smart contract level that you are not overpassing this rule of max number of holders. And if it's the case, you will be denied to make this transfer. So here is an example of implementation of the modular compliance. So in this case, as you can see, the can transfer function, which is taking the address from address to and the value as parameters, will basically process a module check on each single module that is bound to the compliance, to the modular compliance. If one of these modules turn false, then it will return false. And if all the modules are returning true, so if every single module is saying that this transfer is compliant, then the transfer will pass. It will return true. So here is the full check workflow. So we already discussed about the first part, which is the identity verification, so the eligibility check. So in the case that this eligibility check is passing, so B is eligible here, then the token contract will again call another function. Here it was verified on the identity registry, and there is can transfer on the compliance. So in the case of the can transfer function call, it will process all compliance check on the transfer. And if the transfer is not compliant, the transfer will fail. And if the transfer is compliant, the transfer is processed and the transfer event is emitted. So I will let Tony speak a little bit about the ERC 3643 association. That is a nonprofit association we launched to promote the standards.
Yeah, so like Jason just said, we launched earlier last year the ERC 3643 as a non-profitable organization with the objective to basically raise awareness on the market about this standard, to empower developers and to create a real ecosystem around the ERC 3643 and to gather a group of developers who are interested in this standard to build their own application on top of it. And of course, to have an impact on the lawmakers, because we all know here that there are a lot of legislation discussions going right now. So we really aim to have an impact on those decisions and to show that we can actually achieve all the legal compliance and technology requirements of putting the real world asset on the blockchain with our standard. We have four working groups dedicating to this three missions that I just talked about: the education working group, the legal and compliance working group, the technology and security working group, and the ecosystem working group. So all of those groups meet regularly just to be able to improve the communication around the ERC 6643 and make it a standard used all around the world. We have currently 45 members across the whole ecosystem, so from financial services to tokenization providers like Tokeny and Web3 companies. So we have a lot of big names around. We have OneLine, we have Polygon, we have Aztec, just to name a few. So it's really going up. We have a lot of interesting discussions. We have a lot of very interesting projects going. We just finished our first technical project with a company called DevPro, who released their first project around the ERC 6643. So it's really gathering a lot of traction.
Yeah, thank you for listening. And yeah, that's it. So about the slides that we wanted to present. So if you have any other questions, it will be nice for us to answer.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the presentation. I really appreciate you guys taking our time to explain the workflow. The concept of modular compliance is pretty interesting, and I think it will help implementers to maybe pick and choose and use it as per their need. I also like the idea of having must added to specification. As I can see, there is a list of must added to ERC documentation. You're taking the token that must be an ERC-20 compliant, and then with the help of this ERC, we are changing one of the features to achieve what we want to achieve here. And there was a mention of ERC-3463 association, and I see there is a webpage also, ERC3643.org, with a lot of information, and that is pretty good approach to create awareness and encourage implementation. Thank you so much for all the hard work in the background that you have done to make it as a standard for Ethereum ecosystem.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate that. And I have a few more questions that I would like to take in order to maybe get a little bit deeper into the background motivation and what more we can do with this standard. So generally speaking, blockchain ecosystem signifies for the permissionlessness. I'm curious about the motivation to create a standard for permissioned token here.
So yeah, one of the philosophy of the blockchain is really for the permissionless, but it's not really working with the financial world where it's very regulated. There are a lot of permissions, a lot of compliance that needs to be applied. We really believe in the public blockchain, transparency and everything that goes with it. So that's the rationale behind the ERC 6643, is to bring this compliance and this layer of permission on top of the public blockchain to enable, basically, to have financial institutions coming to the blockchain and putting a real-world asset there. So work with the transparency that goes with the blockchain philosophy. Want to add anything, Joachim?
Yeah, no, I think you are right. So there was two possibilities, basically. Either create a permissioned ecosystem on top of a public blockchain, or creating an ERC-20 on top of a private chain, which is the approach that some financial institutions have been taking in the to beginning with. But in fact, you can see that they are shifting more and more towards public blockchain because they realize the limitation of a private network. So the idea here is to put the permissioning layer at the smart contract level instead of putting it at the network level. And I believe it's definitely the good approach.
Sure. I mean, if it is working out well for community ecosystem, that's definitely a good approach. All right. I would like to compare it with one of the other standards available on Ethereum repository. So generally speaking, at Ethereum, we have more than one proposal for one problem statement. And there is a proposal called ERC-823 Token Exchange Standard that tried to propose a solution for a token exchange. Currently, it is in a stagnant status, but that can be brought back to life if author decides. I would be curious to understand here, how does T-Rex token standard differ from the earlier proposed ERC-823?
Yes, so basically I checked the ERC-823, so I know what it's about, and I believe we are addressing two different points. The ERC-823 is focused on the secondary market transactions only, and in fact the ERC-3643 is focused on the tokenization of the real world asset, and in addition to the tokenization process, also the whole lifecycle management around the tokens and the compliance approach, which is not even mentioned in the ERC-823. So it's not about compliance at all. And maybe, yes, the name can be a little bit close, let's say, because we are speaking about token for regulated exchange. And the important point here is the regulated part, let's say. So here we are really creating this token for tokenizing real world asset securities and apply compliance on chain.
That's good to know. Good to know that these are two different standards, and the other one, if the author decides, can be brought back to life and move forward to solve a little bit different problem here. Very well. Moving ahead, my next question is with respect to compliance interface and regulatory compliances. So as we know that securities are heavily regulated, so can you maybe expand a little bit more on compliance interface, like how T-Rex standard address compliance with global security regulation?
Yes, of course. So the idea is that as the compliance is automated by the smart contract, it can be implemented in any jurisdiction. So as I explained before in the presentation, the compliance interface is quite flexible. So we adopted a modular approach that I described before, but you can also hard code all the rules of compliance in your compliance smart contract, as long as you respect the very basic requirements in terms of compliance interface described in the ERC, which is basically to give the access to the can transfer function to make it very, very basic. So this can transfer function, depending on how you implement this one and how you add the different rules of compliance in your compliance contract, you can apply basically whatever rule of compliance that is required. And until now, we never encountered any rule of compliance that cannot be coded in the compliance contract. So I believe it's a very good approach, and it could be adapted to any regulation at the moment.
And talking about the compliance, it was mentioned in the presentation that it is more focused on identity level compliance rather than wallet level compliance. So what is the main reason behind going on identity level?
So the identity level is very important. And if it was not about identity, it should be about something else. But at least you need to know if an investor is holding several wallets, you need to know to have a way to make the links between these wallets, because the compliance has to be applied at the identity level. In fact, it has to be applied at that level, because as the example that I gave you before, when it comes to a maximum number of token holders, comes to a maximum amount of token per investor, all these rules cannot be applied at wallet level, except if you want to specify that one investor can only have one wallet, but it's very complicated to enforce that. So the idea to have these identities is really to create a compliance, some compliance check at the identity level.
That's good to know. Definitely, we need to have a standard. And if we are having a standard, compliance at a particular point is very important to make sure that is there with every application, and interoperability will be easier for projects. And with this, we can perhaps move on to the implementation part. So the proposal talk about the life cycle of token. Does it mean it has limited scope of application?
Yes and no. The idea behind the standard is really to focus on the financial assets, because that's where we think that we are going to bring the more value. But you can basically represent anything that needs to be permissioned with the standard. So as Tokenik, we are focusing mainly on the financial institutions and the real world assets that we can push on the blockchain. But really the idea is to have anything that can be permissioned can be applied to the ERC-6643.
That makes sense. Well, thank you for that. And that makes me curious. Are there any other implementation that you guys are maybe aware of other than the tokeny? The member list that was shown in the presentation, is there any signal of implementing it already, or has there been implemented in their protocol?
Yeah, so we have a lot of use cases in tokeny, mainly, like I said, financial assets. We have also real estate. A few houses were tokenized here in Luxembourg. We have pieces of art, sorry. A piece of Belgian Royal Gallery was tokenized for the ERC-6643. Really have a lot of use cases we can see. And indeed, on the members of the association, also for a lot of them, they are also customers of tokeny, so they have tokenized a lot of assets through us. And like I said during the presentation, we have Def, which is a technology company who used the standard to work on a standalone web application to bring the ERC-6643 into the DeFi ecosystem. So basically an application to make sure that you are eligible for a trade when you put an ERC-6643 in a liquidity pool against an ERC-20, for example.
That's great to know. You actually answered my next question. I was wondering, how do you think that
Perfect.
This proposal is going to transform the securities market? But it is already being used for DeFi projects, so definitely it's going to help a lot.
Yeah, the main pain point that we're trying to solve is the need for liquidity, because financial assets are, by definition, hard to get into liquidity. So that's really the next step. We have built the basic blocks to represent the financial asset on the blockchain. So now this is done. This has been validated by the ERC, by our customers. Now the next step is to solve this liquidity issue, and that's what we are going to focus on in the coming month. I'm not going to spoil too much what Token is going to do next year, but that's really our point of focus now, is to bring this liquidity part on the ERC-6643.
So it's all aligned. We are moving forward with the implementation and adoption. Well, just out of curiosity, how much impact do you think the adoption of 3643 and the TDEX standard would make to the traditional financial system, including securities trading?
Yeah, so more and more, we can see that the trend for financial institutions needs to start looking into the blockchain technology. And they are obviously looking for a standard. What we aim to do is to propose them this standard. Like Joachim said, a lot of them are turning to the private networks, aren't we? And we can see also that the ecosystem is moving this way. We have Polygon, we have Avalanche with the Evergreen initiative, which is moving in this direction. We are firm believers of the public networks, but we know that it comes with a lot of issues for financial institutions. So what we really aim to do here is to bring them on the public network with this layer of permission. And of course, we're also aiming to bring this transparency to the financial market, which is something which is a bit lacking sometimes, and definitely to help them improve their process at the moment and to increase the error rate, for example, because with the automated compliance, it's easier to check for the compliance of transfer, to check for the secondary market, and to help them bring more liquidity into the market.
Yeah, and I would add also one other point, and it's a very important one, is that because we are compatible, because this standard is basically a permission layer on top of ERC-20 and is compatible with ERC-20, in terms of adoption, it's very interesting because it allows you to interact with any dApp that is existing currently on the EVM networks in general. So that's a very important point. The only missing piece, and that's something that Tony was discussing before, that one of the members of the association has been working on lately. The last piece missing was to have a way to check if the transfer will pass or not, because the permissioning layer may stop your transfer to happen if it's not compliant. And that's a piece of the puzzle that has been created by one of the members, is to bring this component, a front-end component, that allow you to display a message saying why the transfer doesn't happen and what you can do to solve the issue. If you, for example, are not yet eligible, then you have a link to redirect you to the qualification platform from the issuer to be eligible, this kind of stuff. So that's really a main focus that has been put on this in the last few months, to bring this interoperability with all the dApps that are existing for ERC20, which de facto we are already compatible because we are an extension of ERC20 here. But as it could pose some issue with the permissioning layer to that also.
Interesting. The effort is to make it even more user-friendly and implementation goes simpler.
Yes.
Very well. I see there is a decent interaction on the discussion to page. People have shared their thought and promptly you guys have been responding to address the comment. I wonder, is there any significant change that perhaps was made on the specs of this proposal based on the feedback received? Any interesting story that you guys would like to share?
Yes, so basically, yes, we had a lot of discussions, not mainly, in fact, in the forums, but with a lot of actors from the financial ecosystem. And that's how we shaped, basically, at the beginning, the standard. And coming from these interactions, for example, the modular compliance come from this kind of discussions that we had, that it had to be flexible in terms of compliance. You cannot just have a hard-coded compliance that will never change. You need to have the way to make this. But otherwise, yeah, we had some very interesting discussions on different channels, mostly positive, even if we had some critics about the fact that there is a lack of decentralization, because de facto, when you create a standard like this one, which is permissioned, you have the centralization that has to be there. In fact, we didn't have really the choice about that, because we are reproducing what happens in the real financial world, and centralization is there, and it's still very complex to create decentralization around that. But yeah, the discussions have been quite constructive and have brought some improvement of the ERC. Some discussions also with the EIP editors during the process of getting the standards to the final status have made it change some parts of the standard. So yeah, I believe it was quite constructive, mostly positive, some critics, but mostly good discussions.
That's great. I think that's the whole idea of having a discussion to link so people can come and share their thoughts. And if it is possible to get it incorporated in the proposal, generally author does that. And you receive feedbacks from different forums. That's an added advantage to have the discussion to forum. Very well. I'm curious if there is any limitation that an implementer must know before considering this ERC to implement in their project.
In terms of limitations, it really depends where you want to go. If you want to go on the Ethereum mainnet, the limitation could be about the gas usage, because as you can understand, when you go with automated compliance on chain, this kind of verifications on chain identities, it can be quite costly in terms of gas. So a transaction could cost basically 3, 4, 5 times more than a classic ERC20 transaction. So that could be a limitation mostly on Ethereum. But when you go cross-chain on other EVM blockchains, I would say that's the most challenging part. I don't believe it's a limitation, but it's very challenging. And it's something that we will need to tackle in the close future, is the application of cross-chain compliance. So as you understood, we have in this compliance some parts that are static, which are not a problem, but some parts are dynamic. So if you have, for example, these rules for a maximum volume of transaction per day, per month, a maximum volume, a maximum number of investors on one specific token, this kind of stuff, it's very easy to apply it on one single blockchain network. But if you have a transaction on the same financial asset competing on different blockchain in parallel, and you need to keep track of this data about the compliance, it's very challenging because you need to be aware of what happens on all the blockchains in parallel to know if the transfer is compliant or not, and to know if you are not breaking the compliance by allowing this transfer to happen. That will be a very big challenge in the coming months or in the 2024 in general, I would say. That's something that we have been discussing already with some teams from, for example, at Axela or Layer Zero, so for cross-chain messaging companies. And I believe we can do it, but it will be challenging.
Interesting. Yes, of course, gas cost is a concern for some of the projects, but there are other options, other alternatives, other EVM that people can perhaps use to deploy their dApp. But yes, in terms of looking forward to the challenges that may affect or solution may help run the dApp even efficiently, even more efficiently, is a nice thing to have. So yeah, we can keep the discussion open. This is pretty interesting conversation, but keeping time in concern, I think we should perhaps wrap up. Is there any message that you would like to share with the community? Any thoughts on the documentation process or on the EIP series, the PPNEP series that we have here?
Yes, so I would like first to thank you very much for inviting us to discuss this. And also, as we mentioned earlier at the end of the slide presentation, we created this ERC-3643 association. It's open for members. It's a nonprofit. It's free membership. So the only requirement from our members is to participate to the evolution of the standard. So it's not about money. It's about participation. And that's really what we want to achieve. So we really want to avoid recreating a silo stuff like you have in the classic financial industry. We believe that this standard is very versatile and can be applied to any kind of financial instrument. And what we would like to avoid is seeing a lot of different standards proliferate at the same time, because the point is not about that. The point is not about creating a token that is branded with the name of your company. The idea is to bring assets on chain. And that's what everyone should push through. And instead of losing time to create a new standard, so we call for everyone that is involved in the real world assets industry to join us on this journey and to try to implement a better ecosystem with us.
That is correct. Like all these standards at Ethereum repository are CC0, people can implement it as per their requirement, as per their need. There is no, what we call it, like we don't have trademark, we don't have this thing that it is belonging to a particular company. The idea of having working group to encourage implementation and adoption of proposals is really being encouraged in the Ethereum community. And I'm very happy to see that you guys are moving ahead, a step ahead, by creating an association and inviting membership that may help learn more about this protocol and increase the adoption of it. I think this could be a great example for other ERC protocol in future. If they would like to encourage implementation and adoption, they can perhaps follow the same path and have this kind of working group. Well, thank you so much for all this teamwork over here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Joachim and Tony, we thank you for talking about ERC-3643, T-Rex token for regulated exchange. According to the proposal, ERC-3643 is an institutional-grade security token contract that provide interfaces for the management and compliant transfer of security token. Now, the proposal is in final status, and we are already looking for some of the adoption, but we hope to look forward to seeing more adoption by different projects in the ecosystem. We appreciate you joining us on DeepNE.
Thank you.
On this note, thank you to all our YouTube viewers for watching and podcast subscriber for listening to the special episode on ERC standards. Should you have any question on this or any other topic, let us know at EatGetHerders Discord. Check out the description for more info. We'll be back with another interesting talk. Until next time, keep watching, keep listening, and keep sharing your love with Ethereum Cat Herders. Cheers.